Well, what up, fellas? You got me back in your state again. Shoot, this time, what are we in? Jupiter?
Yeah, Florida? Jupiter, baby.
Right outside Utiki Beach. You know what I mean? We got folks on the water. We got trains passing. They got construction on the bridge. I'm the only dummy in the history of the world that wants to wear a hoodie in March. Freddie T joined me, though, so I feel a little...
We're in Florida, bro.
This is home for me, man.
Yeah.
I grew up in these parts, man. Just an amazing place. You might run into Venus, Tigers, Serena. This is where all that bread at.
It's money up here. It's money.
Oh, yeah.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Get my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Only vision I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Get my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Well, welcome to the Pivot Friday three-man show. We're excited to bring it to you. Bro, this has been a dope week. Like, so much has happened this week. You had your second comedy show. This is the first time I got to go. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was funny the entire time, engaging the entire time. What was crazy to me is I knew most of the stories just because we're always together, but the way that you presented it, having jokes in the middle of telling the stories, I thought it was, just a great show. When you're on that stage, though, bro, this is what it feels like to me. Like, you played football. I don't feel like football was your purpose. I feel like making people laugh, bringing people joy is. How much of that did you feel while you were on the stage the second time?
Bro, everybody knows, like, what football is. Throwing, catching, running touchdowns, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Tackling, breaking tackles. But the greats do it as an art. And that's what I'm starting to figure out, like, during the set and looking down and setting up and trying to be dramatic and seeing, 500 people on the edge of their seat to wait for what's coming next. And it's the art of it. And that's what I'm starting to learn because am I better at comedy than football? I think so.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I really think I could be – I played football, and I ain't make name Pro Bowl. I'm not going to be a Hall of Famer, but I really think I could run with the big boys of comedy. I really think if I put the art to it, I can run with them big boys. So that's the part I saw, that it's not just a craft, it's an art.
Football, you're a one percenter. You know how many guys on the planet try to make it to the NFL and can't make it? So for you to say, are you better, or actually even phrase it, are you better, I think it's kind of... not just giving your career as a football player is due justice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You bless your ass, you were great. But what I saw from the other night was that you're a lot more comfortable. Your transitions were better. It was smoother. You had more people in the stands. So you went out to a bigger crowd, bigger audience, and you were comfortable. Mm-hmm. I think that spells that you can take that next step. Because you went from baby step here to like a very next, you went from having a notepad the first time around to out there just doing your thing. And like I said, smooth transition. So, man, I think you have a future in it. But if you are a better comedian than football player, we'll see you on the Netflix special at some point.
Don't worry. Y'all saw them cameras the other night. Y'all saw them cameras. Just amping it up, though. Like, look, I'll get it, because Duval, you Mr. Duval. Mm-hmm. Little Duval, I went to his show a couple weeks ago, and we sat and played roulette a little bit at Hard Rock, and he was kind of telling me about it, and he's like, master the craft. Get on stage. So we talked for a while about it. And that's one thing that I don't think a lot of ball players, comedians, whatever your craft is, I don't think people ask enough questions. When I got a chance to sit down with Duval and play roulette, I was just throwing money on numbers. I wasn't worried about it. I wanted to talk to Duval about how to be special at this. And I think that's my cheat code to it, is that I know Desi, I know Chris Spencer, I know Duval, I know those guys, and I can really, like, reach out, tap into their knowledge.
Compare that to football, though, because you were around Jason Taylor, you were around Buddy, you were around Zach. You had Hall of Famers in the room with you. You had great players. You had a coach in Nick Saban who, for whatever his failures were in the NFL, is one of the greatest defensive minds of all time. Have you taken some of that football stuff, some of that football, okay, let me pick your brain, and try to be better, try to learn more and use that in comedy? Or in comedy, are you doing that even more than you did in football? Because I'm sure football came natural to you, being a high school All-American, being a college All-American.
I've taken a lot of it. Zach Thomas and Junior, when I came to the league, 05, Junior Seau, Zach Thomas, were my two OGs, and Jason Taylor, that was the four linebackers in Saban's 3-4 defense. I'm taking a lot of that. Like, I just brought the names up with Desi and Duval and these guys. I'm taking the same approach. Like, I've told the story before where, like, I would just go to Zach's house. I knew he watched film every night, AZT, what time we starting. And I knew I was annoying to him. You know what I'm saying? I knew like, Zach was like, God damn, this little young, you know, knucklehead. I'm an old man, I say knucklehead. This little young knucklehead, he's still coming. And I used to go over to his house, and I wouldn't say a word and just sit there and watch him. It's almost, I'm watching him watch film. I'm looking at what he's writing down, and it's the same thing. And that's what I think a lot of young players on one side, comedians on the other side, that's what they don't do. Don't run away from the OG.
Right.
That motherfucker's a Hall of Fame. You know what I'm saying? Like, why would you not tap into him? And that's what I do. And with comedy, I think I got it where everybody wants to help, and I'm going to take every damn bit of knowledge I can get and grab it from them. And that's what I'm doing with football and comedy. So you talking about Zach Thomas, Junior Seau, and I'm talking about Lil Duval.
Right.
Bro, Lil Duval is, they look different, but Lil Duval is a Zach Thomas.
They're about the same height. In their perspective occupations, they're the same height. Like, Duval is a little comedian.
Yeah.
Zach Thomas was a little linebacker. So it's kind of like the same thing.
Duval can fall between that crack in the elevator when you walk in. So he ain't that big, but it's the same thing. Yeah.
The great part of what you do, you come out right away, right? This is going to be unacceptable. I'm going to tell these stories, those stories. Part of your storytelling is sort of the way you came about learning how to have sex.
Yes.
And what sex was. Would you say it was poetic justice and officer and a gentleman?
Officer and a gentleman. Yeah, them two people. And, man, talking about sex, though, to be honest, I got to ask y'all a question, man, because y'all have older children. Now I have my son's 12, my daughter's 11, my son just got to middle school, and it's a lot, like, sex is prevalent.
Right.
And I know and I see what they're watching on YouTube and all that. How do y'all approach the topic of sex? How do y'all, I don't even want to say explain sex to the kids, but what's that first jump off when y'all were talking to y'all kids when they got to that age where you had to have that sex conversation?
You know, I got to a point where I talked to my daughter, but those were brief conversations because she was a lot more mature. And I just told her, look, watch out for this and that or whatever. But I try to treat her a certain type of way so that when she got to that age, this is how these other young boys should treat her, how they should talk to her. So my daughter, she was right on it. So she was good. But typically, boys are they're the knuckleheads. Those are the ones you have to really, you know, grind it into, pause. And I think all my boys are 3 years apart. And for me, I was able to have different conversations at different times. You know, I would go and have a conversation with Braylon. He's like, psh, I don't like girls. I don't have time for girls. I'm on my video game. You know, I go to Austin. Austin's the smooth one, more chill. He's quiet. He's doing his thing. I'm like, yo, you're not gonna have any grandkids right now. You're 18. You have to do X, Y, and Z. You have to protection, but you have to be respectful. You ain't taking nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, those things won't ever happen. And then my 21-year-old, Anari, the conversation with Anari was a little bit more challenging because Anari's kind of a free floater. You know what I mean? Like, he, sex wasn't at the front of his, top of his mind, and I recognized that. But he did like girls and all of that stuff, but it wasn't about sex for him. So I guess the answer would be, Chan, is you got to know your kids, right? You got to know your kids. And then that'll kind of lead you to when it's the right time to have whatever that conversation looks like.
Yeah, I think the thing is you don't teach your kids about sex anymore. Right? The same way you sort of learn through your experiences or through watching TV, like they have the YouTubes and they actually have internet porn. Like there are all these different ways. The conversations that these kids have at school are more advanced than the conversations we had. So it was never for me that sit down conversation, let's talk about the birds and the bees. My oldest is a girl. Her entire life, I was having the sex talk with her. Not to make her uncomfortable, her entire life, I was always telling her the psyche of a man. Her entire life, I was always trying to love on her so she knew what it felt like when you should be comfortable enough to be in that position. Their entire lives, like, I was empowering, like, I'm always like, you're so pretty, you look so beautiful today. Like, I was always trying to give them that so they knew what love was, not necessarily what sex was, right? And then on the other side of it, like, I gave them the real. Yeah. Like, when my daughter and her best friend were ready to go to college, I was like, look, this is how college works, right? I said, men and women think about sex differently normally, right? For the dude is, I'm trying to get with every pretty girl I possibly can because now I'm in a spot where I could. Like, I went to a Catholic school. I went to all-boys school. You put me on LSU campus with all these different types, long hair, short hair, brown skin, light. Like, I was like, this is a smorgasbord.
Run it up.
Right? And so you look at that, I was like, but what happens is, for you, you're like, oh, I really like this guy. And in really liking this guy and being comfortable with this guy, I can share myself with this guy. That lasts for 2 months, right? And then now, you find a new guy 3 months later, you feel the same way. And you've done that 3 or 4 times a year. Now that's 3 or 4 different people that you've let share your energy. And for them, it's just that night. For you, it's gonna be more, right? And then the perception from the outside, and my thing was, there was never gonna be a shaming of who you are sexually, yeah. Anybody. But my thing was always teaching responsibility, right? Teaching consequences and teaching your approach to the human. Because what I told Jordan was, every time you share this with a girl, it's gonna change, it's gonna affect you physically, emotionally, and mentally. Not only you, but her. You have to be conscious of how it affects her, right? You have to be conscious of how it affects him. And my biggest thing was, protect yourself. Understand that every time you lay down, a baby is a possibility. Mm-hmm. An STD is a possibility.
Yes, it is.
Protect yourself against those, but more importantly, respect yourself, respect the person, and respect the act. But I don't think we're in the age where we gotta be like, hey, Lil Chan, Ava, this thing, like this is what Logan told me.
That fear,
Logan told me this.
We get put fear on us about it. And that's what I don't wanna make my kids fear what sex is. It's just, I wanna explain it to them.
Logan said this in elementary. Mom, Dad, I know what sex is. I learned on the playground today. And we was like, okay, what is it? She said, the mommy goes, whoop. The daddy goes, whoop, and the bed goes, erker, 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 erker. Like, that was Logan explaining to me what sex was in elementary, and I basically said, well, in a nutshell, that's correct.
Hit it on the head. But that's my thing. I got scared with it. Like you're saying, it's not a baby can be made, you can get an STD. It's, you have sex, you're going to get an STD. You have said you about to have a baby. I'm like, God. So it was always like a secret to me, but I don't want to, the way I got explained sex by my parents, and honestly, not even my parents, by the older people around me, I don't want to make them fear it. I want to make them know it. And that's what they all got older kids, and I got the babies. I want to make them know it.
You know what? I think since we're talking about sex, you said fear, protection, and kids, it made me think of Bradley Cooper. You know, he recently came out and said he had a daughter in 2017, but he recently came out via someone's podcast and said, you know, I don't see why someone would say they will die for this. Mm-hmm. You know, so basically his daughter, he didn't understand why someone would say they would die for a child. Like, he just didn't understand. He said he didn't even know within the first 8 months if he even loved it. He didn't say her. He said, I don't even know if I love it. But we're talking about protection, right? Like, kind of, what do you guys think of that thought?
Every time I was sitting there, 3 in a row, and I was holding that left leg for Asia, because I was down there. I don't know if a lot of people don't want to be down there. I wanted to be down there.
Cut the cord.
I wanted to see that little crown come on out. When that baby popped out, I had ultimate love for it. That was a piece of me. But I'm not judging Bradley off of it, to be honest. Like, people have different ways of dealing with their emotions and their feelings and all of, and what they are attached to. My kids, the second they came out, I loved them to death. I really I would die for them. To this day, like, people say that, like, there's an old saying, if you're on a boat and you fall off the boat, right? You on the boat with your family, your whole family, and everybody falls off the boat. And your kids go one way, your wife goes the other. Which way are you swimming to save them? If you can only save one side, it's supposed to be your wife because you and your wife can make more kids. That's a hell of a conversation to have, because if my baby's on one side and my wife's on the other side, like, I love both of them equally. I'm like, I would be torn on that. And that's the part that is crazy about it, because I'm sure Bradley or whoever talks about it, you love your spouse, but also as soon as them kids come out, bro, that's half of you. That's half of what you built. That's your legacy. That's what, like, Chan, Ava, Chaz, that's what's gonna live on, and their kids are gonna live on, and that's what will keep the crowd of name going. So I can't agree with Bradley, because as soon as I saw that little crown pop out, I said, man, that's my baby. I cried all three times.
Yeah, I think Bradley Cooper is dealing the best way he knew how with those feelings. Like, for me, having my babies was different, you know? I had Jaden at 19. Like, I was at school. Like, I didn't even know it was happening until after. And then I went, you know, to the hospital. And, you know, to share sort of more, it's like, I didn't know at the time if she was mine or not. So I didn't get to have that feeling, you know? And it's crazy because when the papers came in, right, and I did know, snapped right into
it. You felt it.
And I'd held her already and been around just because I wanted to be in case, you know, but like that changed me. Like with Jordan, the first time I saw him, that was it, you know, but even then I didn't get to be there. I was in college again. So Logan was the first time I ever got to like go through pregnancy and be a dad and be excited. You know, like at 19 and 21 in college, you ain't excited, you scared as hell.
Yep.
You know, but when I had Logan, I was 25, it was my first time, like to be there through the whole process, go to doctor's appointments and be a part of it. And so when we were having Logan, like Yonk didn't get an epidural because she's scared of needles, right? And so like she's soldiering through it, but our doctor went away that weekend. And so we had like one of the doctors from the hospital, and when she's giving birth, it's only a nurse in the room, right? So the nurse is in the room and she's sort of panicking. Things are happening kind of before she's ready. When Logan's born, she slides all the way into the pan, right? The umbilical cord pops. You see what I'm saying? So now I'm panicking, right? The nurse is sort of like in between running to press a button and catching the baby, and she doesn't catch Logan, so she like scoops Logan, and they're going through all these things, they take her out the room, and the doctor was like eating lunch or something, like doing something that wasn't taking care of my child and my wife at the time, right? And so he gets to the room, and I ask a very simple question, right? This time, I'm coming off my best year in football, like I'm having an opportunity to get a contract, so all these things are happening, I'm finishing in Washington, so he comes in the room, I ask a simple question. I said, is my baby going to be okay? Because, like, I'm young. I don't know, like, if that affects her, what's going on. And he says something slick to me, right? And so I start walking toward him right away. Because I'm like, what you said? Right? Because my whole thing is, like, that's my baby.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, at that time, I 100% knew I'd kill for that child.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then everything around it was, like, this was like the height of like my football career, at least at that time. None of that shit mattered, right? What mattered was, that's my baby, that's all I cared about. So the second thought was, I'd lose everything for, right? And I'd die for. And she had done nothing for me. There was no reciprocation of love. That was just what I felt when I learned about her creation, when I learned about her conception, right? And so that's the same reason that if a woman has a miscarriage and that woman is mourning, that man is mourning, is because at the conception of that child, they fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be that way for everybody. I'm not saying Bradley Cooper is wrong. That's just his experience.
Yeah, that's his experience. And I think that when you look at it, you know, I don't condone that statement, or, you know, that's what he went through for that moment, you know, because he's since come out and said he wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for his daughter, which I agree more so with that part. Like, our kids motivate us to fight and continue and move forward. I think for those 8 months that he felt that way, you could have let him borrow that hoodie right there, the emotional support hoodie. Because my question is this, is it a real thing? Like, is there a such thing as a male postpartum? Like, can we experience that?
No such thing as you ain't holding no baby.
I mean, from an emotional, it's more emotions, right?
Yeah, but there's an actual, like, physical, chemical reaction that caused that.
Women,
for women from carrying and delivering and a lot of what they go through. So I don't necessarily know if a man can go through postpartum. I also just think sometimes, like, it's how you're wired. Right, nothing's wrong with Bradley Cooper's experience being learning to love this child.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's wrong with his experience. Our experiences are different. You know, you can look at, like, you can look at you, you know, raised by your grandmother a lot, like, you know, you growing up, that shaped your mindset of what the father you were going to be. Chan, you know, even in his show of this past weekend, when he's talking about how divorces and the way parents treat one another, you know, how that affects the kids. So in his mind, in the way that he works, you know, he said, don't do that to your babies. This is a dumb Chan in the middle thinking a certain thing. So that's affected how he's parented. You met my pops, like, you know what I'm saying? My mom's, like, amazing, right? Yep. So now, like, that's all I knew. I knew the sacrifices y'all made so I could be something, so I could be happy. That's what I gotta do. And so I think that all of those things change it. Like, even so much, man, like, you know, I think Marcus Freeman thinks I'm weird, right? Because I just text him, like, random weekends, like, hey, where can I get a steak? Or, like, what's the best restaurant in South Bend? And he's always like, wait, you here? Yes, I'm here. With my grown ASS son.
My son, yeah.
I am, you know? And, like, that's just how I work, you know what I mean? Like, we were up watching Street Beef the other night. Like, we watched some UFC fights. We got to, it's something he watched where dudes fighting, like, a gate outside their yard. They be punching on each other. They be punching each other down. You know what I mean?
Street Beef.
But now it's, like, a little more organized. Like, one dude had a poster board on the wall because he had an actual rep, like a sponsor. It was like you know, where you bring your car to, like, the repair, it was a repair shop.
Yeah.
That was his sponsor. He had hands, too. He was kicking and everything. But, you know, like, it was so funny, though, because, like, we were sitting around Ricky Pearsall, who went to Florida, the wide receiver, jumped 42, 43, ran, like, 4-4 flat. But Jordan was so excited because that was his roommate at Arizona State, Xavier Worthy. Wow. Xavier Worthy runs 4-2-1. And it made me think about y'all, because, like, I wasn't good enough to where, like, those things really matter. When you look at that, Freddie T, a weekend like that, you know, well, I can't even remember what you said you ran. Like, how do those memories bring you back to your time there? Because, like, this is, like, the most important time in the lives of a lot of these individuals.
You know, nervous moment. You have a lot of tension. They'll probably, you know, they probably all approached it like a game. And it's probably the most important job interview in their young careers, the first one. As that, you know, for a matter of fact, you know, my memories are, you know, I got there, I went with the group. I was told, much like, you know, like the Caleb Williams and these quarterbacks now, which are trending a lot, they're not working out, right? And then they got all these questions that they have to answer. Why aren't you working out? Why aren't you doing this and that? And for me, I was told not to work out. You know, my agent wanted to reserve that for my pro day back in Gainesville. At University of Florida, but walking around with my position group, my natural competitive instinct took over. And one of the craziest memories I have is they were bench pressing. We were doing the 225 test, and the running backs were doing 9 reps, 11 reps, you know, 10 reps. I was like, I can do this in my sleep. I said, this is me. You know, I went against my agent's word because I felt, you know, I felt good about it, you know, and my ability. So I hopped down there and I knocked out like 21. you know, and then everything else kind of shifted from the, I didn't do anything else at the combine. Everything shifted to pro day. You know, just being able to walk around, see all the coaches, meet with the teams. You're doing those crazy tests, the Wonderlic tests. It's a great experience, man. I'm pretty sure these kids, they'll look back and say, man, it was, you know, one of the best times of my life. And then ultimately, you know, the results will determine where I'm drafted.
Yeah, I ain't do nothing either. I had my agent saying I do nothing. I ain't do nothing, Fred. I ain't gonna get baited into nothing. But they made me walk up at the combine in Indy. They made me walk up and say, Channing Crowder, University of Florida, and I'm opting out to do my pro day on May 5th, whatever it was. And they made you walk up, and they want to pressure you into doing it.
It was almost like they were trying to embarrass you.
Yeah.
Embarrass you into, because everybody, oh, you don't want to compete. Like you're saying, your competitive nature take over. No, I ain't getting up there. I'm good. May 5th at University of Florida, Gainesville, Florida. Y'all can see what I can do. Bro, if you can play ball, you can play ball. Right. 4-2-1 to a 4-2-8 to a 4-3-7, whatever it is. Like, they want to, they want to put, they want to quantify football ability. And it's good, and I understand that they want to say it, and everybody says, oh, Chris Johnson, and they want to do those four numbers, 40 numbers and all that stuff. If you can play ball, they're going to find you. And whatever that strategy is, they're going to get to that point, and they're going to figure out. But my thing is, I say this, remember Jim Bates, he was the interim coach for the Dolphins, right? And I went up with, DeMarcus Ware was in that draft as a linebacker, Robert McCoon, who was was jacked up. And I ain't no jacked up dude. Like, I'm a big guy, but I'm not just ripped. And I'm standing on stage and doing that little cattle call, the little slave thing they do when you do all the measurables with no shirt on. And I'm sitting there, and when I get up, like, I'm smiling the whole time because I'm looking at these big yoked up dudes at the draft with these motherfucking traps that come down, and they bouncing their titties up and down. And I'm sitting there, I'm a normal dude, but I'm an All-American. Like, I knew I was better than y'all. Like, I don't look this part standing on the stage, but I'm a better football player than y'all. And so I go up there, my little reach, my little hand size, my little whatever, my little weight, my little height, and everybody's on stage and they're looking down on you from these bleachers. And I'm just smiling the whole time. And Jim Bates calls me over. He was like, hey, Crowder. And I'm walking off, he said, Crowder, call me over. I said, what's up, coach? He said, tell all those guys put the tape on.
Yeah.
And that made me, like, the rest of the week, that's what I understood. I was like, bro, that's my thing, is tape. I'm not gonna bench press 225 47 times. I'm not going to be the biggest, the strongest, the fastest. But, bro, playing football, I can play football better than any one of y'all motherfuckers out here. That's what my thing was, football. So the draft doesn't mean something. They want to quantify it. But football, playing the game, is when you ball.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, RC, what was your experience? I know you were undrafted. I wasn't sure. I hadn't heard the story. If you had, no, seriously, man, watch out. I hadn't heard the story on whether you had attended the combine or not, but one of your alumni brothers, Jaden, he recently said, look, I'm not working out because I want to be able to go back to New or Baton Rouge and make sure we have all of the coaches and scouts there and give my teammates and those guys an opportunity to be seen. What was that like during your time when you came out, and who were the big names that brought the scouts and the coaches back?
Josh Reed was there. He was second round to Buffalo. Biletnikoff winner. Rohan Davey was drafted by the Patriots in the fourth round. Jarvis Green, Robert Royal, all those guys were drafted. We didn't have a Jaden, though. Okay. I think, you know, when you look at Jaden, have an opportunity, probably won't go one. Caleb will probably go one, but he's being talked about in that same sense. Dan Orlovsky said he'd take Jaden one overall. Just to even be in that conversation tells you you're a top player in this draft. But for me, man, the pre-draft process was when I realized that, like, I wasn't it. You know, like, every agent I talked to, you know how it goes. The first thing, especially like around our time, everything is like, where am I going to train? Like, nobody was really willing to, like, pay a ton of money for me to go to train. I was also smart enough that I understood, like, I needed that last semester to get my degree. So I went to school, right? Like a lot of people don't go to school that semester so they can train and prepare. I went to school because I wanted to get a degree, right? I had the key to the indoor. Greg Stringfellow, who eventually took over for Jeff Boss, he gave me the key to the indoor and I trained myself. At the time, I had 2 weekends where I was able to go out and train with this guy, and he kind of taught me some things about the 40, this and this. But I would just go in there, man, at night to work on my 225 press. You know the machine that you got to unclip the bar and do like that? Just in case I got stuck, I ain't wanted to kill me.
Right.
But I used to go in the weight room and work out. Yeah, work out by myself. And I, like, my most vivid memory was like feeling like I had a good day at the first pro day. I think I ran like 4.48, 4.50. My drills were always good. I was in shape. And afterwards, you know, they take, at this time, you didn't have a position group opportunity. They took who they wanted.
Right.
Right? They took who, okay, we think Freddie T is good, or we think this guy is good. And nobody spoke to me. And like my pops was there, you know what I mean? And I was like trying to be positive because I had a good day, but it started to sink in like, nah, you're not one of those ones. Like you're not one of those guys. And I remember going to Houston with my roommate. We were like kind of partying, having a good time. And my agent called me, Joel Turner, and said, hey, Cincy wants to work you out. I was like, what? Somebody wants to come back and work me out? But it was because like the 40 times were probably better than they thought. And so I had to run again, do everything. I'm going by myself. Darren Perry's the coach. I'm catching the deep ball, running back, my back locking up. I've been in Houston, get your freak on. Get your freak, you know what I'm saying? Like I've been chilling, you know? And like I just remember, man, like after the draft, on the phone, the Saints offered me a free agent tryout and the Giants. And by the time I got off the phone with my agent, because I was going to go to the Saints because it was the crib, the Saints had pulled it. So all I had was the Giants. That's when they gave me the little $1,000 signing bonus that I used to lie about every time I had the Saints because I was embarrassed. And I just remember, man, getting on the plane and my mama looking at me and hugging me and saying, go get a job, you know? And like, it was nothing in my soul that made me feel like I couldn't. You know, like looking back on it, I was like, man, that was such a long shot to actually make it. But like the draft process taught me so much about myself, like that sort of will, like that sort of want to, you know, I actually put out a post on Monday and I was like, how much can you love something or show something you love it that there's no promise or guarantee of reciprocation? That was my football life.
Yeah.
You know, like that was how I looked at football. Like it didn't owe me anything, you know? And if I wanted it to love me back ever, I had to give it everything, which meant it could reject me. And I think I learned that, you know what I'm saying, through that process.
Even with what I did as a player, I throw that aside and I look at you just as a, you know, aside from football, just as a human being, as a man. And just telling that story right there, it almost, well, it helps sums up the person you are now, right? Like that never quit, that got a chip on my shoulder, that I'm not gonna come in second. The work ethic, you know, how you prepare and how you go forward. I always used to say, I don't know how in the hell, if I wasn't getting paid, you know, like how am I gonna just go in there and train? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the most difficult. Like, I don't know if I would have had that mindset. Maybe I would have, but.
Y'all be on the Peloton now. I don't understand that shit.
I mean, but like that, now I live. That's hell.
I'm like Big Pun.
Right.
I'm trying to live.
That's hell.
So it's different. But like, he had an opportunity. He went and made the most of it. And it also speaks to, you know, like the recent weeks with ESPN and what you were going through there and, you know, that unwavering, I got to fight. This is what I believe. You know, this is who I am. This is what I stand for. And you prepare yourself and you work hard to get to the position to where they couldn't deny you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, man, I just want to say, bro, like I text you, I'm always a fan.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
We're always family, man, and I'm always rooting for you regardless of, you know, what goes on for sure.
No, I appreciate that, man. Like the whole ESPN thing, like it was weird to me that people started writing stories about it. You know, like I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. And like during negotiations, I dropped a video when I was getting addressed at Inside the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I was just basically talking about my approach to the last 3 years. And everybody took it like I was saying, F you ESPN, I'm gone. No, I wasn't saying that. I was just saying that, like, I feel like I've worked myself into a position where negotiation should be a conversation, right? Not an extortion. Mm-hmm. That was it. And just like, I just, man, like having those conversations, like first off, like I'm grateful to be back. Like I understand the platform. And the ESPN negotiates from the power of that platform. And I was negotiating from the power of what I built, you know? And like I said it, because I represented myself along with David Mulligetta. Like I said it, I said, I get it, man. I was like, Stuart Scott, to me, is the greatest that's ever done this. And God rest his soul, he passed. And these walls still stand. Mm-hmm. Right, and it's still the biggest sports network in the world. So I know if little old Ryan Clark decides that it's not enough money for me and I'm gonna go do this job somewhere else, these walls are going to stand. I say the difference in this conversation and every one we've ever had is, if you don't let me walk into these walls again as an employee, my career is gonna stand. What I've built is gonna stand. And that's why we're sitting having a conversation. We're not here. And so I think, like, we went so back and forth, Chan and Fred. It was like me setting deadlines. Like, I'm gonna give you an answer here. And them like, no, because the answer didn't feel like it was gonna be the right one for them at the time, you know? And it was them setting deadlines for me, you know? And then being like, hold up. Like, me being like, well, I ain't ready. Like, I'm not ready now. And them, instead of saying, nah, you gotta make that decision today, going, okay, hold up. Right? Like, we'll chill. And like, even telling me, I don't know if the video was the right thing to do. And I said, well, it depends on the perspective you're taking it from. I said, if you watch that video, tell me the thing I said in that video that I haven't said to you or to Jimmy Pitaro or to any executive that will listen to me, because I believe that. That has nothing to do with you. That's about my personal story. And you know, like every negotiation, you don't get everything you want. But you got to make sure they don't get everything they want either. And like there's still people there that I feel some way about, man. But like everybody I work with though, Chan, like the same way like y'all show me love, like the Seth Markmans, the SVPs, the Lydell Kings, Dan, Mina, Laura, Swagoo, you know what I mean? Greeny, Stephen A, like all show so much love, man. And so like that part of it makes me happy that I'm back at work.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Bro, I wanted to ask you about that because I knew you were, you know, representing yourself. And kind of like Lamar Jackson, where he was like, no, I don't need no agent. And we didn't know what was going to happen with the Ravens. I knew I was kind of like, is Lamar going to leave Baltimore?
Yeah.
Because he represented. Is that the new wave? Because Lamar did it and got paid. You just did it. But I, personally, I don't think a lot of athletes should represent themselves. They should be in that Yeah. I'm going to say, I don't think they're smart enough to do it. You smart enough to do it. I don't think a lot of motherfuckers smart enough to do it.
I definitely wasn't smart enough to do it before this. For sure, like I had to learn this business and I had to understand the business. I also wasn't in a position to, right? Like you can only negotiate from a platform as high as you built it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Stephen A, like how you always say, put your meat on the table. Stephen A could walk in and put his meat on the table right now because he's Stephen A.
Yeah.
Right? Like Shannon Sharp sort of did the same thing last offseason. Pat McAfee, right? Pat McAfee do what the hell he wants. Like I'm gonna be honest, I respect him. Pat McAfee chose, I'm gonna give up football and I'm gonna start this thing with my homeboys and I'm gonna bet on me. Mm-hmm. And in betting on me, I got one deal. And then in betting on me, I understood that the platform is, I went there. And now with that platform, knowing who you work with and work for, if I wanna call out an executive, I'm gonna call him out. Oh, and next week, I'm gonna take pictures with another one. Cause I ain't got no boss. Mm-hmm. Like he said it, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I wanna get. Well, I ain't got no boss. Like, I want that feeling that Stephen A have every time I walk into work, that this particular entity stands because of me. And what I love the most about negotiations was knowing that people didn't want to talk to me. was knowing that people didn't want to talk to David Mulligetta, right? Because it was we were standing on me. Like, David, in negotiating my money, he ain't got nobody else that's doing TV. He ain't got to be your friend.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't sign up for this business to have friends, right? Ain't nobody gonna advocate for me like I'm gonna advocate for me. And you know what else? I keep score, right? Like, that's what I hate, that's what I miss about football, is we don't have a scoreboard. Like, if I'm on a show, like if I do First Take on Friday, Get Up on Monday, whatever it is, I'm counting how many social pieces you put out, ESPN, my employer, puts out for everybody else that's on TV with me. So I can tell you, hey, go look at Mondays when I'm on Get Up at First Take. Go look at Fridays when I'm on Get Up at First Take. It's not Shannon, it's not Stephen A, it's not Dan, and no disrespect to anybody. It's me. You're posting me.
Yeah.
You're your people making that decision because that's what I do. Check the numbers when I do it, right? Check the numbers when I host a Get Up. Like, check all that, like, I show up. And so you're telling me, like, not to compare myself to other people, but no, if you treat him like that, treat me like I'm supposed to be treated.
No.
And so I think, like, that was always my thing, bro. And, like, that was the thing I was going to stand on. And here's what I wanted with a deal, Chan and Freddie T. The business changed me. Like you say, Freddie T, I always worked. Like, I always had grit, right? Like, I was a dunker. You know what I'm saying? Like, every time I went on a show, I was like, I want to kill you. I want to kill you. I want to kill you. And you remember when, like, they was getting on Kobe after all this stuff, and he turned into the mama, and he started walking around with that underbite every time, right? Like, that was how I looked at every single show,
yeah.
Right? And I was like, man, I would love to be able to shoot turnaround jumpers and smile and laugh and be happy going down the court. Like, I would love to not have to feel like I got to be Mike or I got to be Kobe and everybody's an enemy and everybody's an op. Like, I would love to, like, dunk the ball and go cheese and hug like LeBron and ride fucking banana boats. Like, that's what I wanted to get to, right? I also wanted to get to a place to where, like, man, you know what? Today, it's all right for me to facilitate because I don't have to score 60. Because I felt like if I didn't score 60, I wasn't going to get my money. I wasn't going to stand on what I had to stand on. And the bottom line is, too, bro, I wanted to make myself important enough where they couldn't take this from me, mm-hmm. Right? Well, I could say, no, I'm going to still do the pivot because we're changing culture and we're creating a place for athletes to tell their own story, to control their own narrative. Like, we have changed things culturally. Like, when people walk up to us, man, nothing makes me feel better when they can point to specific episodes that changed their life in some way. Yeah. And you want me to give that up to be in that ownership, to be an employee? No. And I'm gonna be good enough to where you realize you can't stop me and you still want me. And, like, that happened.
I think the three of us, what we're all good at, trusting God's timing, you know, understanding that it's better to wait and let things fall into place as opposed to rush and let things fall apart. Even with, you know, signing our own deal here on the pivot, you know, just waiting for the right opportunity and not selling ourselves short and trusting God, because we've built an amazing platform, as you mentioned, just to hear, you know, the feedback wherever we are, the DMs that we all get about, look, I was contemplating suicide or I was going through this or that. So I think that's a lot more special than taking a big check.
Everybody always says, know your value, know your value, know your value. Like you're saying, like, you know your value. You knew your value, and that's how you can negotiate for yourself, and you knew what you were doing. You were like, check the number, look at the stats. I don't think a lot of people build their value. And I think, just talking about our show, that's what we did. We ground, what was that, 2 years ago, January 18th, when that first show came out, when it was like, what the hell is the pivot? We created our value, we gained our value. So you gotta know your value and all that stuff. And I think people take that for granted where, yeah, no, I'm worth this, worth that. Whatever you're worth is what you worked for. And that work is what it is. So RC, you worked for that. For this, y'all, us three, we worked for this. You gotta gain your value. You have to build your value to know your value.
I also want to say this, since we were talking about journalism, you mentioned the late Stuart Scott, one of the best, legendary, Chris Mortensen. Just want to say rest in peace to Chris, man. Sending the best to his family, because Chris was always respectful. He was always great with me, man. Certainly he'll be missed.
Every time I'd see Mort, he'd scream out, he's out for the year. we sit in the war room and watch the games on Sunday. And like when somebody would get hurt, like I'd always get pissed off when like people would talk about fantasy football. Mm-hmm. But Mort had this way, man, this thing of like making jokes that were like very personal, like funny. Mm-hmm. So he knew it would piss me off when people do that. So like if a guy like sprained an ankle, as soon as he would know they'd be okay, he'd be like, RC, he's out for the year. Cause like guys would like roll around and act all hurt, man. And I used to just look so forward to him doing that every week. He would text me all the time and check on me and just talk to me and just encourage me. And like, I just had so much respect for who he was. And when he got sick, man, it crushed me. I remember we were having a conversation before he retired. And he was like, you know, I can do all the stuff I used to do. Like, I just can't execute it. You know, he had throat cancer. He's like, I can't produce. He said he couldn't produce saliva, you know, and I would watch him struggle through it. And it made me so sad because he made me so happy. And y'all know me, man. Like, I didn't get into TV for friends. You know, I got enough friends. But he was like my friend and my mentor. And I went back, man, and I was so sad. Like when I found out Speedy was cutting my hair, and when I went back to my room, man, I just cried, you know? And I called, you know, Yonk to tell her, and she knew I was gonna be shook because that was one of the few people I enjoyed introducing people first. Like, more this. My dad texted me and told me he was sorry. My mom texted me, told me he was sorry. Mike was like, my pops was like, I felt like I knew him because I talked about it so much. And, you know, I went back and looked at our text and it made me sad because, like, I wasn't checking on him. Like, I got so wrapped up in my shit that, like, I didn't do what he always did for me. Some of our last texts were, like, a couple of them, and so that's some things in between. He texted me when I won the Emmy, you know, and he was like, congrats, man, wow. And I was just like, thank you, you know, so much. And then when he retired, I put in parentheses, I texted him, I said, he's out for the year. And I said, thank you so much for what you've been for me. And I love you. And he told me, thank you. And he texted me that he was proud of me. When someone says they're proud of you, it doesn't always matter. When Mort said it, it mattered to me. And when somebody's alive, give them their flowers. Yeah. Like, I don't know if I told them I loved them enough or how grateful I was for them. And secondly, like, if there's somebody that's worked with me or somebody that's younger, when I get older, that can look at me like I looked at dude, I'd want that. He was honest, he was fun, he was respectful, he was amazing, and I'm a missing man. I guess as we end this show, man, I just wanna say, Mort, man, you're out for the year, but you're never gonna be out of my life. Thank you.
Yeah, dog, Mort, solid, man.
That was my dog.
Emotional a little bit.
Yeah, fucked me up too. Change. He's like, man.
Hold up, limitless, take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust, limitless, take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the